I'm Philip Moore, and this is Travel Talk. Today, we're going to be going to the pages of the AAA Journeys magazine for September and October 2007. But before we get to the main articles of Journeys magazine, let me bring you up to date on the hike for sight. As many of you know, CABVI volunteer Will Hutchinson is making a trek from Mexico to Canada on foot to raise funds and awareness for the Cincinnati Association for the Blind and Visually Impaired. This trek is through the Pacific Trail, which covers area between Mexico and Canada, traveling through California, Oregon, Washington, and basically covers the scenic sites such as the National Scenic Trails, allowing it to pass through 6 out of 7 of North America's ecozones, including the high and low desert, old growth forest, and the Arctic alpine country. Will has been on this hike since May. He began back on May the 7th, and Sharon Lindy, our volunteer director here at CABVI, recently received an email from Will saying that he is nearing the end of the hike. As of Saturday, he was 190 miles away from the end of the Pacific Crest Trail. We wish him luck, and for those of you that are still willing to donate to his cause, you can still send your donations to The Hike for Sight, care of CABVI, that's the Cincinnati Association for the Blind and Visually Impaired, 2045 Gilbert Avenue, Cincinnati, Ohio 45202, or call 513-221-8558. Or you can go online to cincyblind.org, that's CincyBlind.org, and click on the donate link. 100% of your donation will go directly to services offered here at the Cincinnati Association for the Blind and Visually Impaired. And we certainly look forward to having Will here on Travel Talk when he returns home to Cincinnati. Now on to our feature articles from the September-October issue of Journeys magazine from AAA. Today, we're going to go on a Riviera Rendezvous. Riviera Rendezvous, Follow the Crowds to Mexico's Western Hotspots, by Lynn Selden. Known as the Mexican Riviera, the Pacific Ocean and Gulf of California coastlines of mainland Mexico and Baja California Peninsula offer sun, sand, and Mexican culture to visitors in the know. That's why it's easy to say see to destinations like Los Cabos and the rest of the Mexican Riviera. The Mexican Riviera covers a wide geographic range and features varied destinations. Except for snow skiing, you're sure to find what you want during a Mexican Riviera vacation. Some of the possibilities along the mainland of the Pacific coast of Mexico include, from north to south, Guaymas, Matlazan, I'm going to slaughter some of these Spanish-sounding names, that's M-A-Z-A-T-L-A-N, San Blas, Puerto Vallarta, Manzanillo, Ixtapa, that's spelled I-X-T-A-P-A, and I'm going to spell this one because I'm not sure how to pronounce it. It's capital Z-I-H-U-A-T-E-N-E-J-O. And, of course, Acapulco. Of course, there are many other smaller up-and-coming possibilities along the coastline, offering great weather, varied accommodations, the culture of Mexico, and much more. On Baja California, which is the longest peninsula in the world, tourism truly is hot. Along with the Los Cabos duo of Cabo San Lucas and San Jose de Cabo, the possibilities from south to north include Todos Santos, La Paz, Laredo, Mulegé, and Santa Rosalia. For those who just want a taste of the Pacific coast, Tijuana and Ensenada are just across the border from San Diego. There's much to see and do in Los Cabos. The twin towns of Cabo San Lucas and San Jose del Cabo, that make up the destination of Los Cabos make for a true Mexican tourism success story. The area was comprised of sleepy fishing villages and wild stretches of sand for centuries, until the marine-rich waters attracted fishermen and other adventurers from the early 1900s through the 1970s. By the mid-1980s, resort infrastructure and a new airport made Los Cabos even more attractive. Los Cabos is situated in the southernmost end of the 1,000-mile-long Baja Peninsula and bordered by the Pacific Ocean on the west and the Gulf of California on the east. It's also often called the Sea of Cortez. Though many early visitors arrived after a long boat ride, today's nonstop flights and convenient connections make Los Cabos easier than ever to reach. This convenience to a relatively remote destination has made Los Cabos famous for celebrity visits. The list includes Brad Pitt, Harrison Ford, Bono, Oprah Winfrey, John Travolta, Spike Lee, Celine Dion, Leonardo DiCaprio, and more. The area's geography is an amazing mix of beautiful white sand beaches, rock outcroppings, and virtually unspoiled desert landscapes stretching for miles. In fact, a dramatic rock formation called El Arco, the Arch, is the region's most famous natural landmark. It sits at the tip of Land's End, which marks the exact spot where the Pacific meets the Sea of Cortez, and pounding waves from both sides formed the arch's expanse. There's so much to see and do in Los Cabos area that the longer stays are the norm. From beautiful beaches to super shopping, Los Cabos has a lot to offer. There are 20 main beaches in the region, and each of them has its own character. For instance, Playa El Medano is the center of Cabo San Lucas water sports, while Playa del Amor is accessible only by watercraft and is near the famed El Arco. Playa Palmilla, that's spelled P-A-L-M-I-L-L-A, is one of the best places to get a classic Los Cabos beach picture, while Playa Costa Azul is a great place to take pictures of surfers catching waves. Other options include Playa Chilano, great swimming and snorkeling there, and Santa Maria Bay, a marine sanctuary. Besides the beach, there's much to see and do. Eco adventures include whale watching, generally from late December to late March, hiking, biking, desert excursions, horseback riding, and birding. On, below, or above the surface, options include scuba diving, snorkeling, surfing, parasailing, windsurfing, sea kayaking, water skiing, sailing, boating, and world-famous fishing, a Hemingway favorite. Los Cabos also has become known as for its championship golf courses, including designs by Jack Nicklaus, Tom Weisskopf, and Robert Trent Jones II. There are more than a half dozen public options, with more on the way. The area also is becoming renowned for its shopping. Relaxing spas using indigenous ingredients, varied dining options, especially fresh seafood, and nightlife at many resorts and nightclubs. Additional sightseeing options include San Jose del Cabo Lighthouse, San Jose's Old Church, the nearby colonial town of Todos Santos, and more remote East Cape to the north of San Jose. You may want to get a recorder because here comes some contact information. For general Mexican Riviera information, you can visit the website www.visitmexico.com. That's Visit Mexico as one word, visitmexico.com, or visit your local travel agent. The article continues. Quiet Cabos. One of the many beauties of Los Cabos area is that it's so close to the remote desert regions of southern Baja California. The area is quiet and barren, with few tourists. In less than a half an hour, visitors can be amid a rugged desert environment. The best way to enjoy the rugged desert is with a comfortable excursion from tour operators like Terramar. This longtime Los Cabos company offers an array of touring options, but the best bet for heading to the desert is in one of its brightly covered Hummer H2 four-wheel vehicles. Its website offers lots of choices for booking, including many guided tours and drive-your-own possibilities. From desert vistas to deserted beaches, it's a great way to see another side of Los Cabos. If you're more into convenient beaches and shopping than desert, Terramar's Hop-On, Hop-Off Pass, that's H-O-P-O-N, H-O-P-O-F-F, the Hop-On, Hop-Off Pass provides total flexibility in exploring the southern Cape of Baja California, Cabo San Lucas and San Jose del Cabo, and everything in between. This well-priced 24-hour pass for adults and children provides a bus loop with posted and frequent pickup and drop-off times that features 13 convenient stops, providing access to shopping, beaches, activities, dining, and everything else between Cabo and San Jose. Here's an insert article. Open-air bazaars, souvenir stalls, and more. There are many shopping possibilities in Los Cabos. Cabo San Lucas is more known for open-air bazaars and souvenir stalls, while San Jose del Cabo offers an array of unique boutiques and galleries with arts, crafts, clothing, jewelry, and more. Without a doubt, something from the unique glass factory definitely is a Cabo San Lucas lure. The sprawling facility includes a quick demonstration and thousands of glass pieces for sale, from tiny figurines to huge and colorful vases. The shopping possibilities for crafts from Baja or over on mainland Mexico include leather, silver, colorful Mexican blankets, and artwork from the burgeoning local arts community. Cabo's Mercado Mexicano is a good place to start comparison shopping for both quality and price. If you're looking for a unique painting, sculpture, or other artwork, head to the galleries of San Jose del Cabo. Sol Dorado Art Gallery, Jose Pez Gordo Arte Contemporaneo, and Galleria de Ida Victoria are also local favorites. There are many opportunities to taste and buy a variety of famous and not-so-famous Mexican tequilas. Bar hoppers in Cabo San Lucas should check out Pancho's Restaurant and Tequila Bar, supposedly one of the largest tequila sections in the world with 500-plus and counting, or Cabo Wabo Cantina, including Sammy Hagar connections and a tequila shop next door. Over in San Jose, Los Barriles de Cuervo is a labor of love for Rigoberto Cuervo Rosales, son of Don Malaquias Cuervo, a direct descendant of Jose Cuervo. Ask for a taste of the smooth tequila Don Malaquias and about the miniature handmade white oak barrels. Both are great buys. And that wraps up the cover story from September-October 2000's Journeys magazine from the American Automobile Association. Let's turn now to another article featured on the cover. This one is much more closer to home. It's about war and West Virginia. War and West Virginia. The Civil War lives on here thanks to the preservation of key historical and battlefield sites. By Chiles T.A. Larson. From the initial heady days after the 1861 firing on Fort Sumter, that's Fort Sumter, Virginia, emerged clearly as Let's start over again. From the initial heady days after the 1861 firing on Fort Sumter, Virginia emerged clearly as the center of military campaigns designed to put down the conflict known today as the American Civil War. Much of the territory belonging to the Old Dominion, which would become the new state of West Virginia on June 20, 1863, was in the center of operations during the first 6 months of the war. Today, visit West Virginia's Civil War sites that live on after more than a century of American peace. The first battlefield. Harper's Ferry, West Virginia, where the United States Armory and Arsenal had been established in the closing decade of the 18th century, also was where the abolitionist John Brown had attempted his revolutionary scheme to rid the country of slavery. Because of its strategic location and the armory, Harper's Ferry quickly was occupied by Virginia forces under the command of Colonel Thomas J. Jackson in April of 1861. The initial action for control of the Staunton-Parkersburg Turnpike, which was a vital connection between the heart of Virginia and its western counties, was an advance by a strong Union force on Grafton, where it overwhelmed a small contingent of Confederate troops. Pushing on to Philippi, the Federals, under the command of General George B. McClellan, routed the few rebel troops once again, causing them to retreat some 30 miles further south to Beverly, and then 12 miles beyond to Huttonsville. This almost bloodless action with no fatalities marked the first land battle of the Civil War. Beverly was a major junction on the Staunton-Parkersburg Turnpike, and the Confederates could not afford to allow the enemy to advance farther. Reinforcements were hurried to the area under General Robert S. Garnett. Garnett did what he could to mount sound defenses, but was defeated on July the 11th, 1861, at Rich Mountain. The Federals, guided by a local inhabitant, were able to gain the summit in the rear of the Confederates, and after several hours of heavy fighting, were able to capture the position and the single rebel cannon, forcing the outnumbered defenders to flee. The battlefield today can be visited by hiking or driving about 5 miles up to the summit from Beverly over an unpaved surface of the original turnpike. Interpretive signs highlight the action. One indicates that a few Confederate veterans returning after the war carved names of fallen comrades on rocks. The troops advance. Several days after the battle at Rich Mountain, Garnett, while directing skirmishers at Cork's Ford, were mortally wounded in a spirited rear guard action, therefore becoming the first general officer to be killed in the war. The success allowed McClellan's forces to move east to establish a fort at Cheat Mountain, thus controlling the vital Allegheny Mountain passes. Concerned with the advances the Federals had made, Confederate States of America President Jefferson Davis ordered General Robert E. Lee to the area to take command. His efforts in this sector were thwarted often by poor weather conditions, sickness in the ranks, and turf fighting among politically appointed generals. In a letter to his wife Mary dated September the 1st, 1861, from camp on Sewell's Mountain, he wrote, "It has been raining in these mountains since July the 24th. All these drawbacks with impassable roads have paralyzed our efforts." The article continues. 2 weeks later, in a lengthy letter to her, he expressed his frustration. "I'm sorry, as you say, that the movements of the armies cannot keep pace with the expectations of the editors of papers. I know they can regulate matters satisfactorily to themselves on paper. I wish they could do so in the field. No one wishes them more success than I do, and would be happy to see them have full swing." Lee would be reassigned after the onset of winter, but one positive event occurred from this campaign. He came across a colt in Greenbrier County that later became his famed warhorse, Traveler. McClellan came out of the struggle with a promotion to command the Army of the Potomac. With the focus of the war removed from Western Virginia, minor engagements and guerrilla activity continued in the pre-dawn hours of May 23, 1864. In the normally peaceful town of Lewisburg, situated in the broad, rolling Greenbrier Valley, some 800 inhabitants awoke to the roar of artillery and musket fire. The brief but bloody battle was won by Union troops. Wartime relics. The General Lewis Inn, a charming hotel in Lewisburg, was named for the Revolutionary War soldier who founded the community. For the Civil War buff, a number of interesting visual reminders and historical objects to recall the battle are in the area, among them a Confederate cemetery where the remains of 95 soldiers were removed from the churchyard next to the old stone church and interred in a cross-shaped mass grave. A number of public buildings were used as temporary hospitals following the battle, including the Greenbrier County Library, where a rendering of an ironclad and graffiti can be seen sketched on a wall. A Confederate statue situated in the park-like setting across from the library honors local veterans. Across the street, the North House Museum offers artifacts and documents from the Civil War era. Further evidence of the battle can be seen where a cannonball was embedded in a church. A lasting view. After leaving Lewisburg, following U.S. Route 219 north to Huttonsville and then to Elkins, by taking this direction, travelers can visit Droop Mountain Battlefield State Park, located in the Greenbrier River Valley. This is the site of the largest and last significant engagement fought on November 6, 1863, resulting in a Union victory, ending any serious efforts by the Confederacy to control West Virginia. The large log watchtower overlooking the valley was built in 1930 by the Civilian Conservation Corps. As with the Rich Mountain Battlefield, Cheat Summit Fort, built by the Federals to secure the Staunton-Parkersburg Turnpike, can be reached by following a marker just off U.S. Route 250, a few miles east of Huttonsville. This rugged, mountainous region today makes up a large portion of the Monongahela National Forest. The roadbed to the forest is similar to the surface leading to the Rich Mountain Battlefield. The fort was successful in repelling Lee's efforts to capture it. Camp Bartow, Camp Allegheny, and other important Civil War venues all can be visited in this central region of the state. Although the fighting continued east of the West Virginia state line in 1864, major action in the Shenandoah Valley helped bring the war to an end the following spring. Visitors may wish to visit an initial key battlefield in Stonewall Jackson's electrifying 1862 Valley Campaign, which was fought at McDowell, a few miles east of the state line, just off of Route 250. Union General Robert H. Milroy had begun a movement towards Staunton, but his attack failed, and he retreated north with heavy casualties. The pain and suffering resulting from the Civil War have faded with time. What has not faded is the beauty of this special part of the country. Lee, with all the problems of his new command, found time to make note of this in a letter to his wife shortly after his arrival. It says, "The mountains are beautiful, fertile to the tops, covered with the richest sward of bluegrass and white clover, the enclosed fields waving with the natural growth of timothy. The habitations are few and population sparse. This is magnificent grazing country. And all it is, and all it needs is labor to clear the mountainsides of its great growth of timber. The West Virginia Division of Tourism can provide brochures and maps on Civil War battlefields. You can obtain them by calling 1-800-225-5982. That's 1-800-225-5982. Or visit the website www.callwestva.com. That website is spelled www.callwestva.com. Or, of course, you can visit your local travel agent. We've got a few more minutes here on Travel Talk. Let's take a look at something really close to home, Ohio's Winged Warriors. This is a short article highlighting the museums in Ohio associated with the Air Force and other aircraft. First, we have the USAF Museum. The National Museum of the United States Air Force is located at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base near Dayton and contains one of the world's largest collections of vintage military aircraft. Among its more than 300 aircrafts and missiles are more than 60 aircrafts that saw duty during World War II. In addition to its vast collections, special tours, educational programs, and events, the best feature of the USAF Museum is that the admission and parking are free. However, there is an admission fee to see programming in the museum's IMAX theater. For more information, you can call 937-255-8048 or visit www.nationalmuseum.af.mil. And also highlighted in this Winged Warriors article is the Waco Air Museum. The Waco, that's capital W, capital A, capital C, capital O, aircraft company in Troy, was among the nation's leading aircraft manufacturers during the early 20th century. The company was noted for its open cockpit and cabin biplanes, in addition to World War II combat gliders in several other models of aircraft built between 1919 and 1946. For more information on the Waco Air Museum, call 937-335-9226, or you can visit the website www.wacoairmuseum. That's Waco Air Museum as one word, WACOAIRMUSEUM.org. And finally, the Tri-State Warbird Museum. Opened 2 years ago in a large hangar next to the Claremont County Airport, the Tri-State Warbird Museum has a collection of fully restored and operational World War II warbirds that includes a P-51, B-25, and FG-1D Corsair. The Corsair arrived last year and is undergoing a full restoration that visitors can view up close. A P-40 Warhawk is expected to arrive for restoration in September. So I suppose it's there by now. The museum also offers special educational seminars and features exhibits like a replica of World War II aviation field barracks. The Tri-State Warbird Museum is open Wednesdays 4 to 7 p.m. and Saturdays 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Admission and parking are free. For more information, call 513-735-4500 or visit the website www.tristatewarbirdmuseum.org. That's www.tristatewarbirdmuseum. That's Tri-State Warbird Museum, tristatewarbirdmuseum.org. And with that, we're out of time for Travel Talk, and it's time now to go to our next program here on WRRS, Radio Reading Services.